said the night wind to the little lamb. I remember learning this, and I remember singing it without end. And I remember my mother telling me to stop. She did not recognize it as a Christmas hymn. And I was in elementary school. I would troop around the house singing it to annoy her. Well, you can imagine that. Because she didn't know the words. Set the night wind to the little lamb. Yeah. But now I know why she didn't know it. Because in 1962, I was six. And we must have learned it in our elementary school choir. It wasn't written until 1962. And it was written in the aftermath of World War II. I know, 62 is a long way from World War II. But there's a connection. You see, it was in World War II that this man, Noel Rainey, was conscripted by the German army. He was French, born in Strasbourg in 1920, but he was conscripted into the German army and made to fight in World War II. But he became a part of the resistance. And his last assignment as part of the French resistance was to get his entire battalion to go into this narrow alley where they were going to be ambushed. He, under the guidance of the resistance, led these men that he had fought with, that he must have become friends with some of them, led them into this ambush. He himself, the story is told by his daughter Gabrielle, was wounded. But he watched around him men die. Well, after the war was over, Noel Rainey made his way to New York City. And he became a prolific songwriter. He wrote TV show theme songs and jingles for commercials. And his publicist and his publishers were so taken by his work that they asked him to write a Christmas song. In the midst of this, he married Gloria Shane Baker. And between the two of them, they just turned out so much music. But this Christmas song was a problem. Because you see, what had happened to him in World War II marked his heart. He was never the same. And if you remember 1962, you remember that it was a time when the United States was locked in a 13-day stalemate with the Soviet Union. Jack Kennedy and Nikita Khrushchev had both just decided that there was no peace to be had. Kennedy set up a blockade around Cuba because they spotted nuclear missiles. All of a sudden, the war that had so ravaged Rainey's heart was back on the forefront. The kind of destruction, the kind of carnage that he had lived through, he could imagine, because 90 miles off the coast of Florida, there were the missiles. Khrushchev and Kennedy at loggerheads, October 22nd, 1962. President Kennedy comes on television and tells the United States that there is a blockade and that it is no clear way forward. For the first time, the United States military goes to DEFCON 2, Defenses Command 2, meaning there's only one more level before they begin to deploy resources. This was the season in which Rainey had been asked to write this Christmas music. And rising up in him is the memory of what war could do. And he was without the ability to reach for joy. The story that his daughter tells, and it's actually written on the counter if you want to see the whole story. The story that his daughter Gabrielle tells is that he was walking along the streets of New York, and he chanced upon someone like Emma. But there were two of them, And as he watched these two small children in their carriages, it appeared that they were speaking to one another without words. But the look in their face was communicating something, and it looked as if they knew joy and peace. And into Noraini's being came the words, "The night wind to the little lambs. Do you see what I see?" In the midst of his own sadness, in the midst of his own worry over what was happening in the world, he heard these words, a star, high up in the sky. Rainey, we're told, rushed home and sat with Gloria, and they wrote the song. It was October 29th, and by Thanksgiving, it was published, and between Thanksgiving and Christmas, it sold 250,000 copies without Amazon or iTunes. And the song has been recorded by Perry Como, by Rosie O'Donnell and Elmo, and everybody in between. But Rainey, before he died in 2002, said that his favorite version was by Robert Goulet. And if you listen, you will hear Goulet at the end when it's time for the night wind to speak and time for the lambs and the shepherd and the king. When Goulet gets to the chorus about the king, he veritably shouts, "Pray for peace!" He stops singing and he shouts. And Rainey loved this rendition because he said, if nothing else, this hymn is a hymn for peace. He wants us never to listen to it without praying for peace. And beloved, as much as the United States needed peace in October of 62, as much as the Soviet Union needed peace, so did Isaiah's people. 2,800 years before Christ was to come, 800 years before Christ was to come, 2,800 years before the Cuban Missile Crisis, the same circumstances occurred. Isaiah's people could hear the rumblings to the north of the Assyrians, hear the rumblings of a war machine that was pointed and headed toward them. They were in the line of fire of a fighting machine that must have rivaled anything they could have imagined. And into that moment of deep worry, not unlike Rainey's worry, into that moment of hearing the rumbling of the Assyrians, the prophet Isaiah steps and says, "No, those of you who've been in gloom under the pall of the Assyrians coming, those of you who've heard their boots marching, here is what I have to say you. Naphtali, do not worry. Zebulun, do not worry. For all of that war material is going to be trampled. All of that aggression is going to be stopped because light has come and joy has come, and unto us is born a son, and the government will be upon his shoulders, and he'll be called Wonderful, Mighty Counselor, Everlasting God, Prince of Peace." Isaiah was likely writing about a king named Hezekiah. Hezekiah had just come to the throne, and Isaiah was in part speaking to the people about a new leader who loved the Lord and who would follow after the Lord. But Christians have appropriated Isaiah 9 for centuries to bespeak and betell the story of Jesus' coming, Prince of Peace. All of the worry about war, all of the worry about that which would take us out, we can give up because light has come and joy has come. The one who is the Prince of Peace. We wait his advent. We wait his coming. Joy, unspeakable joy. But if that's true about Jesus, Tell me, why have there been untold wars since AD 33? Tell me, why on a good night are only 10 people killed in Chicago? Tell me, if he's the Prince of Peace and he came with this resume, why is it that Christians are being slaughtered in Sri Lanka? Why is it that Rohingya are being slaughtered in Myanmar? Why is it that you are afraid to walk in neighborhoods you don't know, for there is no peace? My question is, did he fail? Prince of Peace? Where's the peace? Beloved, on this day, when we light an Advent candle for peace, I don't want you to be confused. He has not failed. But we are living between two Advents. The first, when he comes as a tiny, humble child. The first, when he comes to begin the path to grow into being a human and a divine being, so that all that you and I experience, he would have experienced and he would have known. We live between Advent 1, when he comes as the sweet baby Jesus, and between Advent 2. When he comes again in risen glory, when he comes again in triumph, we live between these two Advent poles, and it is the meantime. And if you separate that word into two words, meantime, it begins to tell you a little bit about where we live. Jesus didn't fail. He's just not through. Jesus didn't fail. We're just in the middle of the story. Jesus didn't fail. He's waiting for you and for me. Blessed are the peacemakers. I wish I had a giant mirror, because that's you and me. We are living in the meantime, but we are living there not without purpose and not without role. You and I follow the one who says, "My peace I give to you, not as the world gives it." The world can't take it away. You and I live following the one who breathed on his disciples after the resurrection, and the first word he spoke to them was peace. You and I live following the one that Paul says gives a peace that passes all understanding. You and I follow this one who is indeed the Prince of Peace, who came and set the trajectory, set the story, and went away and said, "I'm coming back again. And in the meantime, I've got some things for you to do. Blessed are you as you are peacemakers." How might we make peace? Beloved, when Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers," in the Gospel of Matthew, he is sitting on the side of a mountain. There are thousands of people who have gathered to hear what we call the Sermon on the Mount, or the Beatitudes. There are thousands. And among them, some are going to thrive with his message. Some are going to struggle with his message. And some are going to walk away completely. But the way in which people follow is going to fit who they are. How are we peacemakers? I don't know what your call is going to be a peacemaker. That you are called to be one, of that I am sure. But there are going to be as many different ways in this room to make peace as there are people. Some who are sitting under the sound of my voice are going to be called to make peace in the world. You may go out and engage in organizations that argue for peace, that stand for peace. Even in our own Baptist faith and life, we have the Baptist Peace Fellowship. Some here might want to join with the Baptist Peace Fellowship and move across the world and make peace. I don't know how Emma will make peace. I don't know what her role will be in the world, but there will be one. She will find ways to make peace, and she will be of a generation that has us to look for as her legacy. So as we make peace, we give Emma the foundation on which that beautiful smile will stand and speak, I am a peacemaker for God. Someone here is called to go out into the world to make peace. Do not give up your role, for God has enabled you and called you. Just like Rainey could not have imagined writing that Christmas hymn as a clarion call for peace, there may be something in you that you will speak out and change the world as a call, as a spokesperson for peace. And some among us may simply make peace with others. If you light this Advent candle for peace in your home, or if you sit under its light in this place, I invite you to think of someone with whom you might want to make peace. I don't know who it is. I don't know how it would be. I don't even know if they're still on earth or have gone to glory. But how might you pray for wisdom and guidance and power to move out in the world and reach out a hand of peace to someone with whom you are in a relationship that does not know peace? And for some of us, it's to make peace with yourself. For some of us, we enter into this season of the year filled with all the things we haven't done, filled with all the things that we wanted to do, filled with our failures and our sense of why we are not worthy. Beloved, God looks across the portals of heaven and sees you the exact same way you see Emma. God looks at you and sees the same light and the same love and the same beauty and the same innocence, because you, no more than Emma, are a child of God. And so to make peace with yourself is to say, God, you have called me. You love me. You tell me I am worthy because of who you are in me. Help me see myself that way. Rainey wrote a hymn that we might cry for peace. On this day, our world needs peace. Do you hear what I hear? Do you hear this call for God's peace to rise up among us and be shared between us and beyond us? We celebrate Advent. We celebrate the waiting for the baby to come. But beloved, as much as we celebrate the first Advent, we are called to look for the second Advent and to trust that he's coming back, to trust that he's coming to fulfill every promise, and that in the meantime, you and I have our roles. This is a season when we say peace on earth. As we say that, may we each seek our place where we may be that source of peace, wherever God allows us to be found. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me.